Is it already going? Today is May the 8th, 1962, and I, Divina Sampi, am visiting with Harry Hughes at his home at 216 Fifth Avenue.
Sixth Avenue?
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit louder, Divina. You say, Divina, tell me your full name and where you were born. Just tell me your full name and where you're born.
Why?
Well, I'm going to let you hear it all back so you hear what you're saying. All this is going on the tape right now, what we're talking about.
Well, wait a minute. I'm going to read something out of here. I should have my glasses with me.
Talk loud.
Oh, well, have it off for a minute, Harry, till I find something I'm
going
to read.
Go ahead, talk.
Nardale visiting. Arnold Nardale, who heads the Nardale Corporation, is in Fairbanks on a business visit stopping at the Nardale Hotel. Nardale, a retired Klondike mining engineer, makes his home in Seattle. He will remain here for several days. That's it.
You're reading news, I think.
Well, that's all right. Okay. I mean...
This is May the 9th, 1962 at Fairbanks, Alaska, and an old-timer by the name of Bill Julian is over here visiting me at my house. And this is Harry Hughes recording for Igloo 4. Now, Bill, I want to ask you a few questions. I want to get your full name. You spell it out so it'll sound right.
Spell
me your full name.
William.
William.
Julian, J-U-L-I-N.
J-U-L-I-N, Julian.
Yes.
And where were you born, Bill?
I was born in Italy.
You were born in what town in Italy?
The town you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Castellammare.
About central Italy, is about center of Italy?
What?
Castellammare is about center of Italy? About...
No, he's on the Adriatic.
Adriatic Sea.
Yeah.
On the Adriatic Sea.
Yeah.
And how old were you when you left Italy?
I guess about 13 months.
Oh, you was just a child. How did you come to America then?
Oh, they come with the Fuchs.
Oh, and they come, where did they come to America?
Strumanville, Ohio.
Strumanville, Ohio?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you went to school there?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, how old was it when you took off to come to Alaska?
About 16, 17.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just about.
You know. You were just a kid when you come to Alaska, too. What year was you born? What's your birthday?
The birthday, 1883.
What month?
February the 9th.
February the 9th, 1883.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And when you come into Alaska, where did you come in at?
I went to Nome.
You went to Nome first?
Yeah.
Was the gold strike on when you went to Nome?
Well, the town was boomed quite a bit yet, but later on it was dying off, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, and when did you come into the interior?
But after the time, you know. But
yeah, well,
you see, now I was out. I went out to the World's Fair, and it was 1909, I believe.
1909 World's Fair. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. Then I went back there. Then I went back. I went prospecting up on the Goose Stream River, you know.
Gold Stream?
Goose Stream.
Goose Stream?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I went through to go to Kansas City with a horse once, and I went back, and then I went right back again and prospecting up there in the Goose Stream River. The creek, they call them Goose Creek.
Mm-hmm. You've been prospecting most of your life in Alaska.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, how'd you come to wind up over in the Cantation where I met you?
When I come up here, and I went up on the Bonnefield.
In the Bonnefield country?
Yeah. Then I heard talk about the fellow, I had a leaser with these Gustavsons, you know.
Yeah, I know that.
On Grubstein.
Mm-hmm.
Then I heard talking about, on Candillion there, Glen Creek, about a fellow named what is the other name? Used to have the... place it on the roadhouse.
Roadhouse, yeah.
Yeah, down the Mother Tutel Tanigre.
Yeah.
Matt Fisher,
yeah. I heard his name.
Then when I come out, I asked him about that he wants to give me lease on that ground in the condition today. And he says, I figure to go back there myself, he said. Well, I came to Fairbanks, you know. Then on my way down, you see, I was going to build a bank on the Bonfield. I met him on the, George, it's a German, they had a roadhouse there. George, what the heck, I can't remember, he has a name. It's a first name.
Was it Burroughs or Knight?
No, his name was George. He's quite a bit German. He used to have a lot of fun. He used to
go
to Fairbanks. Then that night, Matt Fisher came along.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a couple of young dogs.
Mm-hmm.
See, at that time, he only had one dog. One dog. And so he says to me, "Where are you heading for?" He said. I was going up on Bonfield. I had the horse too, but I did not pick the horse yet. The fellow named Brown, he went crazy, you know. Postmaster in Fairbanks, Deal?
Deal, yeah.
Yeah, he was an administrator to that. So he told me I could use the horse. Mm-hmm. See? And so I says, I was come down and look for you, I told him.
Mm-hmm.
You see, about that ground, I'm making a deal, I told him. He said, "Well, I was on my way to Fairbanks to look you up, make a deal with you," he said.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, "Where's the deal?" "Well, I'm getting old," he said, "on the first place. The second place, he gets a lady." He says, I don't think I can go over there. I'll tell you what I'll do," he says. "I'll give you half and rest and half and this day on the 9th fraction,
mm-hmm.
and then on number 12.
Mm-hmm.
They go there and got to go right away, do the assessment work."
But that's on Glen Creek.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I says, "Okay." So we made the deal, you see. And then I bought these dogs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Got these two dogs and a sled. The sled was much good, but better nothing, you know. Mm-hmm. They had no sled. So then when I got down there in the Wood River, I met the fellow named Frank Weasel, you know, a Russian, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I had made the summer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got him to go with me, you know, you see, because I couldn't do the work alone, you see. And so I paid him $5 a day in expenses to go out there, do the work and back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then after we get over there, before we come back, so we went up on a ship to get some sheep.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
that was good meat.
Oh.
The best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then in the spring, you know, I prepared to go over there, you know. And so I went on and did up a lot of stuff. And then by this time, I made pretty good with the crustaceans and grub steak, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a 9 dog, and then.
Mm-hmm.
And I started out, and then I hired a man in Fairbanks. I don't know if you ever know him. He was an Italian. John Condal.
Oh, I heard his name, yeah.
He died, he got thrown on the cost equipment later on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to pay him $5 a day in expenses from the time we started, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I have 22-ton supply, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had the 3,900.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got some more down the Wood River from Johnson Road. I had the business.
Was you hold it on dog team?
Yeah, dog team.
How many dogs you have?
9.
9 dogs? And yeah. How much load could you haul each time?
Well, it depends, you know, when I get on the ice and on Togland.
Mm, that's easy going on the ice.
Yeah, I load up the more.
Mm-hmm.
But then I had to cut out, you know why? It really flurries no one the ice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the two of my dogs got a strain at on the hip.
And hurt them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have to stop.
Like the lighter load.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They light up the load and go. I had 2 sleds. They had to go back and get the next sled.
Well, how much did you haul? 500 pounds at a time?
Oh, hell, more than that.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah, 1,200 pounds.
1,200 pounds?
Yeah.
9 dogs, 1,200 pounds.
Yeah,
on the ice, it was all right, but when you hit snow, it wouldn't go so good.
Well, the dog slipped, they get the strain by,
strain
the,
hurt
by a slip.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't get the hole, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So now I had to cut it on and make extra trip to the other way.
Mm-hmm.
but then when I went through, I got the fire to Little Moose, he called.
Little Moose Creek, I know where it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, from there, when I started to go back and see where the weather got warmer, you know, mm-hmm. and what is supposed to happen. So when I got down the top ladder down there, you know, it must have been clear water. Christ, it was a foot of water all over there.
Everywhere, yeah. I walked through that one canyon when I walked with hip boots.
So now I had to walk ahead the dog, and I have his full name is John, and I come down to, he's, but he don't understand like who's a young man. Mm-hmm. And the walk of that damn thing, you know, so over 3 miles on the other way. Mm-hmm. The field found with the ice cracked, you know, the water go down.
Oh, yeah, it goes away, and then you got ice to go on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then I made 2 trips, I relate, 12 miles above a nice roadhouse, you know,
mm-hmm.
made a short trip.
Well, who was over there in the roadhouse that one?
At the Knights.
Knights Roadhouse? You know them the Knight, did you?
Oh, yeah. Old
and Burroughs, too?
Well,
Jim and Burroughs? Jim Burroughs?
Well, Jim Burroughs. He got there with Henry Knight later on.
Yeah.
Old man. See, they both died out there.
They both died there. I know.
Yeah.
I visited with
him. So Henry, he took in, see, 1 meter to go with him in the winter time, you know, but can stay on when you do something, sniping here, you got to hold your outfit and the material, you know, the dog. Then I told Jim Burry, see.
Mm-hmm.
So Jim Burry, he was up there, you know. He was, remember when he was game warden?
Oh, yes, I remember.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now they go, that gives you an idea, you know, you see. We had only one game warden in all Alaska that time. Mm-hmm. And we had lots of game.
Oh, everybody had.
Well, now they claim. Oh, they kill a game, they said that. I don't believe that. In our seminar, look at what they done here last fall, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to they try to destroy the buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
I, that's the first trick I ever known.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe on that. I went to put an application over here, but finally I didn't go on the meeting. I didn't go to where I got the, where I had them, where they're picking me up, and now they didn't matter. I wouldn't kill a buffalo anyway.
No. We used to kill meat when we need it. Now they kill it for sport.
Yeah.
And that's no good.
Yeah, after the trouble. Mm-hmm. But then the law didn't got them right yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the game warden ain't got too much to say to all around.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Well, most of these game wardens are not trained. They don't know how to live off the country. They go to school and they know only what's in the book.
That's right. You see, now, depends, you know, that time there was lots of trapper and all prospect at the same time and keep up with those winter road, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now they don't get to this.
No, now it's, you got to make your own trail.
If they wait for the highway to develop Alaska, there's a big mistake.
Yeah, they don't go out and live in the country like we did.
You see, you know, this big company, you know, they don't go out to prospect.
No.
You got to find the gold, then they're going to prospect them in for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But they
you do the work and then they take it.
Yeah, you got to show that the ground is all right, otherwise you wouldn't spend the talking about it, you see? And because they get the credit, but that's the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
They don't help you now, you come in a person, you know? So over there in the Caribou Creek, for instance, we made a holiday, trying to send the engineer today.
Mm-hmm.
They spend the $10,000 today. And 5-6 mile surveyor there, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And this way you can even find them little stakes they put in there.
Can't even find them, huh?
Well, that's all they ever did.
Mm-hmm.
Never built a road or nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, last summer, a year ago, I had to build the slide at the Lofani down there.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the road slide on. Then I spent 4 months to rebuild the road.
Make a road back.
Well, you see, the Nenana gravel, you see, didn't hold.
No, it's not.
You see, so I had to shoot at the mark and everything, you know, to go through there. And I had to hold 50 feet, mm-hmm. cut in the wood log, and push with a tractor across. I found out the road I was hitting the day. Mm-hmm. Then when the road it was up this way, the ground, she settled down there, you see. It looked like it was a road. I didn't go. I should went and see.
Mm-hmm.
But that wouldn't matter anyway. So finally, I got those logs, pushed with the dozer across, you see,
mm-hmm.
and ran up to the bank, then she came out. Then I had to cut the lots of those what they call them, corduroy.
Corduroy road, yeah.
Yeah, and then fill them up with a brush and a yard of dirt in it.
What can you tell me about old Bill Taylor? He was a friend of mine, too. What can you tell me about him?
Well, I tell you, Bill Taylor, you know, he said, one thing about the booze, the people can handle should never touch them.
That's right.
You know, Bill Taylor,
mm-hmm.
I grew up with Bill Taylor many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to go to my lower camp down the Timber. He was across the hill there and help himself. But one fall I had left to myself. You know, I found a coffee can full of sugar there with a note on top.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I got you last the sugar, he said. He says, but I fill your sugar can.
Mm-hmm.
But when he heard across there, you could hear a dog, they know, they're hollering.
You
know.
Can hear for miles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he come in a couple daily, they come in there. He says, did I done a hell of a daughter trick? He says. Says what? Take all your sugar, he says. Well, I did that, all right, I told him. So, but then when it gets to me, you know, he know down well I couldn't go up. I had to walk on back on my back 5 mile up of the creek. See, I had to, he said I was on cargo, but I had the cabin and cash it up a glacier creek steel.
Over glacier.
Yeah. And I had to go back on my back.
Well, Bill was
older than me. He was a nice fellow, you know.
Yeah, he was good-hearted, but he didn't have no responsibility.
That's it, no.
No responsibility.
When he come and turn, you know, he ring and ring and ring. If you go in his room, he wouldn't let me out, but you could see him ringing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I seen him, if I had 2-3 bottles of whiskey at the wax. Well, when he get to the deal, he have a goddamn thing. See?
Nothing left.
You know, then he was pretty good. I noticed they used to borrow $50 up to $100. They decided to give them a credit.
Mm-hmm.
See, but then, I suppose he goes to fire it and pay back the money and because he probably said it was not good.
Mm-hmm.
I see coming up along there with the FKC eggs, the old damn thing you wouldn't mind the $20.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Then what are you going to do? And he come and stay with me, you know? Then, and sometimes they come in the summertime, and once they come in there, he says, I say, where you been? Oh, he says, I've been on a trip. He says, but I didn't stay there very long. Prospecting, he said, says, why? I didn't have the grub.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why don't you take him along? I tell you, I didn't have the grub.
He didn't have the money to buy it either, huh?
So, well, I said, hell, I said, you can get some meal. Well, he says, I haven't got a dog pack. He had 3 dogs then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hell, I got the hose there, too small. I said, it's all 16 inch. I said, they sent me the wrong hose. Smith here used to be, you remember that thing?
Matson, yeah, I remember.
George Smith and James.
Yeah.
And what the other fellow? Was the three brothers.
Clark and Smith? No, what was his name? Mm-hmm. I know who you mean.
Well, it was George. He was the oldest one, but he was the shortest one.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and then, I just mentioned his name. Well, one of them used to have a store on the Tannenau one time. Yeah. Well, anyway, and I told him, I says, well, how am I going to sew? I said, I got a sawing a hole, I said. You know, the soil hole that you put the loop, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I told him, it's so fine to help him, you know. And he made the tack, you know. But, I said, it's not Mr. Judgeman, you know.
Yeah, it's poor judgment.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know from the first time I went in there, you know. By that time, he was at the welfare banks, a lawyer, a doctor, investor there.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, you know, he used to get up to $5,000-$6,000 assessment he was supposed to.
Mm-hmm. To get. Yeah, he had too many claims.
Yeah.
He had miles of claims.
Oh, great.
I walked over that, and he had miles of claims. They told me for about 10 miles, I was still on his ground.
But I said, that was, you know, he could have the money, but then when he does, when he collects that, he goes outside.
Yeah, make a trip, spend it all.
Yeah, he goes to California, and then he could make it broke.
Yeah. You see, when Dunkel leased that ground from Bill Taylor, I was pilot for the cat crew to take them in. I walked from the railroad in with the machinery and the cat crew.
Yeah. You did?
Yeah, I walked to lead them in.
Oh, yeah.
See, I went out as a pilot.
Oh, yeah.
I walked and made the trail for them so they wouldn't get in a hole. You see? I walked that 90 miles.
Like you know that creek, what is his name? You mentioned it. Andrew, he had the cabin on
the Middle River.
Yeah, but the close.
Clearwater.
In the Mount Cabin.
Yeah.
I mean, much of a small creek. It's a road to go up on that creek.
Popovich Creek, you mean?
I don't know the name, you know.
Panguinhe?
Maybe.
Panguinhe and Popovich Creek.
Yeah. You see, that's the Middle River here. And it's a creek coming up with you.
Mm-hmm.
See a little bit. And when the road go up there, up
on the bench.
Up along there.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're coming out, they kind of a hollow there.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got the road, they know. The time they hold the order.
Yeah, they put a new road in last year. You see, last fall, the state had a crew go in and build a new road to Stampede. But they got to put in 5 bridges and some culverts yet. Quite a lot of culverts.
Yeah, that's going to cost a lot of money.
Earl Pilgrim is going to mine at Stampede this year.
Yeah.
At the antimony mine.
I didn't see him, but I see him on the paper, you know, somebody told me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see him on paper. Mm-hmm. Did he left? He used to stop there on Northmore Road, but...
Paul Harris building. Yeah, he has a room there.
I wonder, did he left?
No, he's here now. He just come in. Yeah, he's been out to the mine, come back. He's going to take some machinery out.
But that's one thing, you know. I don't see how they're going to cross those rivers, though.
Well, he's worrying about that, too.
You see, you know what he made the mistake? You know, one time the road committee in Anchorage, they was going to build the road from the main highway up there, you know, to the highway, down the Togla. And I heard them over my radio, you know.
Mm-hmm.
See, they asked him about when they want them to come in. Pilgrim was to help me, see.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Pilgrim told me, he says, I don't think I can bother. He says, right now, he says, we got to postpone and build that road.
Mm-hmm.
See,
mm-hmm.
What the heck is the difference? Then the hell of a lot of extra. Far, but they would make a better road.
Mm-hmm. You over connected with Pitt McKinley Park Highway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they told him, he said that he wasn't ready to help him, you know. See, he had to deal him. Pilgrim that time, he had 2 cats and himself.
Yeah, he had 2.
Yeah.
That's right.
But he said that he wasn't financed to help him.
He wasn't able to help him. But you see, he was hauling ore out to the railroad.
Yeah.
See, he hauled 465 tons of ore out to the Alaska Railroad. The price dropped, and he left it set there. So they sent a wire to me, and I hired Otto, the Finn fella, to help me load it, and I loaded 18 carloads of ore. Just the 2 of us loaded the whole 18 carloads. See? And shipped it for him. Then I was down there when you took the cat into your place. You bought a cat and took it into your place.
Well, you wasn't there that... before that.
I was working on the railroad.
No, you was up to Andrew and Zaga.
Yeah, I've been there a lot of times. I used to go down and help them out.
Yeah. You see, I come with the dog team across there one time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I used to go there and cook when he didn't have a cook, you know.
I didn't like it the way the model at the road house.
No, he made it out of cinders from the roundhouse, you remember?
Yeah, but the model cut the top off, you know.
Mm-hmm.
See? And it's so low up there, you know.
Low ceiling. Yeah. I know.
Mm-hmm. I suppose he figures don't take much heat.
No, that was it. He was putting low ceilings to save heat. He told me all about it. And the one at Middle River, he made that octagon, round one, you know, with stories above each other. You remember it?
Yeah.
It's all gone now.
No more.
No more. Even the cache is gone. You remember the cache? He built a cache way up one? That's all gone. Yeah, I stopped there that trip and looked all around. Lee Swisher. You remember him, Lee?
Yeah.
Lee Swisher?
Oh, yeah.
He trapped there after Andrew did.
Yeah.
And he's living in Pennsylvania on a farm now.
Lee
is, yeah.
He says he was on the farm.
Yeah, he's on a farm.
Mm-hmm. You know, you ever met his nephew?
Yeah, I met him when he was here that one time.
Yeah, see, they went title miner down the Savage.
Yeah, down Savage River.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not Lee, he's a character too. You can't make him understand anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he told me, he says, little pay that we had there.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. and the Savage between the layer of gravel.
Just little cracks. Yeah, there wasn't much.
And he said, well, I said, well, that's not the gravel on the bottom of that. I says, what is it? Sure it is. He used to see. No, no. That's at false bedrock. That's what we call the nanogram.
Yeah.
Okay. But I tried to explain it to him how to find a better pay, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, he says, it don't matter. He says, the gravel is gravel, he says. Well, you don't know. It may be still there. If it is in the bedrock above it, is,
yeah,
the change.
Frost held it.
Well, when the change, you come a real bedrock, you see? Mm-hmm. They might be damn good.
Yeah.
You see, because these nanogravity don't catch much of gold.
You remember when I was on Lignite Creek and they was making fun of me for prospecting on Lignite Creek?
Yeah, but then people as I said, he don't know nothing himself.
Yeah, you see, but I found some on Lignite Creek, but it wasn't enough to make good money.
Well, you know that creek what they call Sanderson Creek?
Sanderson? I was on Sanderson.
Well, fellow named Fred Steele, Fred Tyson and I, we went over there from Todadudanik.
Todadudanik, that's right.
Over there. Mm-hmm. And we stopped a little shack, a little cabin, you know. And you know, by God, the next night, you know what happened? Mm-hmm. Over the floor, we had to get out.
Oh, you had to get out? Oh, yeah, there was a still in that cabin one time. You remember the guy with bootlegging had a still in there?
Yeah.
You remember that? He used to haul it down with the dog team?
So Freddy says, by God, he says, we found a little gold, you know.
Then Tracy had a still over on Lignite Creek, too. You remember that one, about 7 miles up the creek?
Yeah, well, he told me about it.
You know about it, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I seen it. The still's still over there. They found the copper. Everything else is rotted away, but the copper coil, the barrel staves, and the rings and stuff like that, the fittings are still there. The old tub is all, and the pans he had is all eat up, rusted away.
Yes, but that says he was quite a guy, isn't he?
Then Johnny Bichet used to make home brew. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Hmm?
He make them on the pot, the sweat pot.
Yeah. And then Dalton was there, and Tracy, and Joe, and Fanny, and let's see, there were some more people around there. I can't remember them all.
Well, I'll tell you, there was an old man, Mark Coco, he died maybe before you got there, you know. Mm-hmm. And Johnny Bousset's father, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was Pete Nelson.
Pete Nelson, I remember his name.
Then another fellow named John, he was offered catalyst, you know. But he didn't die, didn't he? He come out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see, you know, it was going to snap on the Eureka Creek today.
On the Eureka,
no,
yeah.
The creek, Willow Creek.
Willow Creek.
Yeah. And he built a cabin there. But, you know, I wasn't out pretty well ahead of Clearwater, at the Myrtle Creek.
At Myrtle.
And he came along, he had one dog in a little bit of a sleigh, and he was pulled by the neck. And he got down the snow, you know, after the city grapple in the morning, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And when he gets soft and punch, look like a moose who walk on the road.
Oh, he should start in the early in the morning when the snow is solid.
Yeah.
And that sun comes out, it gets soft.
And then, you know, he had no gun, no dog feed.
No, no.
I don't see what the heck.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, John, what the heck is his name? And I can't listen. So I said, John, I said, you should have never started coming over here without a gun.
Mm-hmm.
What for? Well, you're going to need to meet yourself, and there's a scrap for dogs, and you should prepare. And then I said, you should buy some rice, cornmeal. Well, he says, I bought 25 pounds of fish. Well, that's nothing. I said, they won't see the dog maybe a couple of weeks, they mushed.
Yeah, we're getting to the end of this tape now, Bill Julian. And I'm going to stop this and let you hear your voice back a little bit, okay?
April 11th, 1962, and this is a memorandum for Piney Igloo 4 by part of the Second Visiting Committee, composed of Frank Young, Andrew Wicken, and Harry Hughes. We visited two or three old timers today. We visited Albert William Trana. He was born in Sweden. NSOS
on December the 16th, 1882. And he come to Wyoming from Sweden in 1905. And then he come up to Alaska in 1905
also.
He worked around the Copper River area on the Copper River Railroad, and he also worked at Cordova,
and he worked for the Alaska Railroad,
and in 1917
he was in an accident and lost one arm and was crippled up considerable in the other arm. When he left the railroad in 1917, the railroad took up a collection to send him back to Mayo's to have his arm taken care of. They wanted to buy him an artificial limb. I remember some of it. I was on some of the committees in the past years to help some of the disabled and welfare cases on the Alaska Railroad. I was employed in the B&B crews at the time. That's known as the Bridge and Building Gang. All right. Albert got back to Mayo Brothers and went through the clinic, and they put him off for his case for taking care of him for some time. They said there was probably 1,200 people ahead of him. So he took off for Minneapolis. And he got into Minneapolis and contacted some of his friends there. He had one relative. And he got in to see an old-time doctor that was quite wealthy, he said. And the doctor took him in and gave him a thorough examination and decided to operate on his arm because he got tuberculosis of the bone and they had to remove the arm. So this doctor had him in the Swedish hospital. Albert said this hospital was a very fine, elaborate hospital. He described different parts of the operating room and the different parts of the hospital and about the young nurses. He said the operating room had a big amphitheater in it where people sat behind a soundproof section, the relatives and friends and other doctors, to watch the operations. They had four operating tables in there with great big lights. And he said the nurse, he'd never taken gas before. The nurse put the gas mask on him and told him to take three good breaths of it. He said, well, after the first one, everything passed out. He didn't know no more. And after 2 hours and some minutes in the operating room, he woke up later over in his ward on his cot. And his arm was bandaged up awfully tight, and he was in considerable pain and complained. So 8 days later, they removed the bandage from his arm and let him look at it. And immediately when they removed the bandage, it started up circulation again, and his arm healed up excellent. And within 10 days, he was told he could start back to his home. And he headed for Seattle, Washington, and back to Alaska. He has owned property here in Fairbanks, four pieces of property, he told me, and he's been on the tax rolls of Fairbanks since 1925. He's on the state welfare, the territorial and state welfare. He receives $100 a month. He has one little cabin in here. It is paid for, but actually with a $19,000 welfare lien against it, between $18,000 and $19,000, you would call that cabin property of the estate, although he's still paying the property tax on it. And he told me last year he paid $35.50 property tax out of his $100 pension money, or welfare money. And then Frank and Andrew went over to visit with the neighbor, a friend of his. And while he was there, he talked considerable about the Alaska Railroad and the history around Fairbanks. He knew me when I come in the country. He knew when I had a boat running up down the river. And we talked about a man known as Eat 'em Up Frank, about 25 or 30 miles below Fairbanks here on the Tanana River.
man who used to run a roadhouse. And people used to stop in there, and Frank was a great hotcake maker. He would start cooking hotcakes, and when somebody came in, and he'd really fill you up. Well, if you didn't clean them up, why, he always had to say, "Eat them up or I'll have to feed them to the dogs." So that's how he got that nickname, Eat 'em Up Frank. I knew the man. I stopped at his place. I used to have a riverboat and run up and down the river there. Well, then Frank come in here to be, Eat 'em Up Frank come into Fairbanks to be caretaker of the dump for a while. And Albert used to be pretty close friends of his, and they visited a lot and talked about things. Albert, having only one arm, you see, and the other one crippled, he's been quite handicapped, but he's very independent, and he's a very good citizen, has always been a good citizen. And I would like to make this little memorandum for the pioneers of Alaska Eagle 4, and this is my memorandum for today, May the 11th, 1962, and this was Harry Hughes.
This is Saturday, May the 12th, 1962, and this is a memorandum of a funeral for an old-time Alaska pioneer. This is funeral services for Pete Bajornich, 80-year-old prospector and miner who died on May the 7th, was conducted today at 2 p.m. at the Fairbanks Memorial Chapel. Pioneers of Alaska Eagle 4 conducted the ceremonies, and interment was at Birch Hill Cemetery. Pallbearers were Malter Lindgren, Reuben Johnson, Bob Bigovich, Jens Walzine, Edby Davis, and Billy Wick. Bajornich lived many years by himself in Grail, and he was found by his cousin George Bajornich, collapsed on the floor and taken to the hospital, and died later the same day. Another cousin, Steve Bajornich, survives. He runs the Model Cafe here in Fairbanks. And the other survivors are a brother in Paris, one sister in Yugoslavia, and a nephew in Titogard, Yugoslavia. Bajornich came to Alaska in 1898 and lived in the Fairbanks area since 1909. He was born in Yugoslavia. This is Harry Hughes recording. We had quite a turnout and a very serious ceremony. It was well conducted. And we took some photographs. Mrs. Jean Schreiber took pictures at the Memorial Chapel, and I, Harry Hughes, took some photographs at the grave for the family and for George and Steve Bajornich to use to send over to Pete's home country. The time is now 4:30 p.m., and everybody has returned home from the cemetery and from the little tea or visit we had of old pioneers at George Bajornich's house, George and Mary Bajornich, and we kind of reacquainted with some of our old-time friends. And this is the end of this memorandum. Well, this is Sunday morning, May the 13th, 1962, and this is Pioneer Visiting Day, as usual. Jimmy McDonald and myself visited Nylon over in Grail, and I took Jimmy around and showed him where a number of the other old-timers lived that he'd probably lost track of. And then that was about in the morning, and then about noon we went out to the International Airport and had lunch and looked around the airport a while, and then come back into town and went out the Richardson Highway and out about 24-25 miles. Just before we get to Eielson, we saw three moose in the road, and we saw quite a few birds and ducks. Then we went on down to 34 Mile, and there was lots in Kennedy's Field down there was a large flock of geese, ducks of all kinds,
And then we took quite a few exposures with a camera. Hope we got pictures. And then we went on down to Big Salcha River and Aurora Lodge. The ice is jammed up between the bridge and the Tanana River, but above the bridge was fairly open water. Then we went on down to Lake Harding, and the roads were in fair condition, but there was considerable water, and we didn't think it was a good idea to get off of the pavement and chew the other roads up. So we come back towards town, and on the way back to town, just this side of North Pole, there was a pickup truck flipped over, and we stopped and flagged traffic until the state police got there. The boy wasn't hurt too bad. He had a skinned up leg and a little mud and dirt all over him. And it seemed as though this car might have belonged to somebody else. It was supposed to have been in the hands of an estate. Probably shouldn't have been on the road. It was a souped up car that belonged to an electrician that had owned Husky Electric. Electric company here known as Husky Electric. It was a fly-by-night outfit that hadn't existed very long. And the guy that started it, they said, committed suicide. I don't remember the full details of it. This is all for Sunday, May the 13th, 1962, this memorandum.
Well, there's one more item for this Sunday. After I got home, Paul Juzinovich come over and spent a couple hours with me this evening looking at some of the color slides and pictures that I've taken. This is the last item on May the 13th. This is Harry Hughes. This is Monday, May the 14th, 1962. There was nothing exciting happened today. They had a regular city council meeting this evening. They didn't accomplish very much. They seemed to postpone all the important things for further study or delay. That's all for this day that I have to report. This is May the 15th, 1962. And at 2:30 today, the Pioneer Igloo 4 Welfare Committee met with City Attorney Barry Jackson in regard to the welfare of the aged cases here in Fairbanks. And we discussed considerably about the possible tax exemptions and possible relief from interference of the aged people, as most of their lives are very short. They won't be with us many years, and it seems as though that the city attorney himself was favoring reasonable legislation to correct the bad situation. At that meeting was Adolph Stock, Colin McDonald, George Gilbertson, Harry Hughes, and Barry Jackson for the city of Fairbanks. That's all I have to report on at this moment. This is Wednesday morning, May the 16th. This morning I worked around the yard and working in my sheds to get things in order. Also, I called on Frank Young about noon, and we made a visit to Irving McKay Reed. He's president of the Tanana Yukon Historical Society for the year 62-63. And we discussed a lot of personal memorandums and things that have happened over the past. He's writing a book or a story up on some early day characters and people. And we took two or three pictures of
Irving Reed and his wife, and the little squirrel in the yard. It was a pretty medium cloudy day, this was. The roads are quite torn up at this time of the year. There's lots of what we call frost pots in the road. They boil right up, frost boils, and make mud on top of the road. Otherwise, everything is, weather's fine. We've had a mild spring up to now. That's all the report for May the 16th, 1962. This is Harry Hughes, recording for Igloo 4. This is May the 17th, Thursday evening, and it's now about 9 o'clock, and Mr. and Mrs. Reed have been over to visit with me here. This is Harry Hughes, and we've had a little discussion on the Pioneer Park project and other little interesting details. And what do you got to say about it, Irving?
Well, I haven't very much to say, except it's been a very interesting evening, and we hope to do something about the Pioneer Park when we go to the city council meeting next Monday. And also, I want to go to the Board of Regents with the delegation from the Pioneers, myself representing the Tano Yukon Historical Society, and see if we can't get some expression from them to back up the park.
What do you say, Mrs. Reed?
Well,
do you go along with that?
Yes, I do.
This is May the 18th, 1962, and this morning I had two Verifax copies made of the Department of Natural Resources Division of Lands letter of November 22nd, 1961, in regard to the Pioneer Park. The co-op Photoshop made these Photofax copies of no charge to Igloo 4, Pioneers of Alaska. And one copy of this is to be used by Mr. Irving McKay Reed, of the president of the Historical Society, in his conversations with the Board of Regents at the university. A second copy is to be used by the delegate from the Pioneers Igloo 4 in the course of his discussion over this proposed Pioneer Park and agreements. The copies are in three parts, showing the letter and the intent and some of the regulations and the proposed deed or controlling deed. This is Harry Hughes recording for Igloo 4. This is May the 18th, 1962, and this is quarter to 10 in the evening, and my friend and Pioneer Paul Dravinovich has been over to visit with me this evening, and we've been talking about old times. I've been interrupted several times with people coming in, and Paul's been telling me a lot of things about the country that was here before I was here. Paul, let you talk a little bit on here now.
What do you want to say?
Well, you tell me what you saw right around here when you come here.
Oh, well, the first time I come over here, and was, it's nothing but lots of trees.
Trees and brush.
Trees and brush and water, and we didn't have any road like we had now. And, of course,
Do you remember the old NC stable that was here and blacksmith shop?
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
On this lot.
Yeah,
you remember
and,
it?
Blacksmith, I think it was a big fella. What his name?
I don't remember his name, but he had it right here where this
was. Yeah, yeah, I was there.
It was
I remember
that. Big
barn
in the blacksmith shop, and they used to shoe the horses.
Yeah,
there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And used to be quite a few Harding had, no Harding, but Jordan King was there, you know, and he had quite a few horses and shoeing and I know quite a bit, but
you tell me about when you first met George King when he come in the country.
Oh, well, I I can't exactly as
remember.
No, I can't remember.
But
no.
You knew he was a World War pilot.
I know.
Flyer.
A long time. I know him. I know his daughter too. Yeah.
Do you remember he flew the largest airplane in the early days that was ever built?
Yeah, that's
right. One with 12 motors on it.
Yeah.
Made in Germany.
In Germany, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Do you remember the plane that he brought up here, the Fokker?
Fokker, yeah, that's right.
He brought over here to Fairbanks?
Yeah, Yeah.
Can you tell me anything about that plane?
Well, I don't know. Much.
Time passed, didn't it?
Well, I know. But I know him now, all right, then. And,
George King was in town the other day,
uh-huh.
And we had quite a talk about it, and laughing and joking about his flying, and his story is true. He was a real Alaskan bush pilot, one of the originals.
That's right, too.
And he was going home to Boundary.
Yeah.
And he flew over the other day to Boundary,
uh-huh.
Or they didn't land at Boundary, they landed at Eagle, and then they pick up their car and drive over to Boundary.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And he kind of made fun of us for not stopping longer at his place. So we promised next trip when we go, we'll bring the recording. He's going to tell us about those airplanes.
Okay, by God, that's true. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, Galen.
Galen?
Galen, yeah.
Yeah.
He died, I think he got wrecked close to Juneau down below.
Mm-hmm.
But I know him. He was first.
Do you know Johnny Hard that worked for Galen
I know
for many years?
Yeah, I know.
Johnny Hard was my little neighbor up there for many years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I was Scott, you know. Scott, he was in Cordova coming back and forth, mm-hmm. you know. And finally, I guess the wreck close to Yakutaka Beach, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I know quite a few of those flyers, but I can't.
Well, do you remember a fellow named Christensen that used to fly for Carlson?
Yeah, I know him, yeah.
He used to dive over my cabin and plow down over the cabin when he come by.
Yeah.
So I could always tell who it was. I could hear that plane heading for the cabin.
Oh, yeah. And Frank Pollock, you know, and he's out with, Pollock used to work for, I guess, for PA.
PA,
you know, and finally, he finally got his own plane, you know, and it was prospecting and thing, you know, and Bill Lavery, you know, and
well, I rode with Pollock and Jim Dodson.
Yeah.
And there was another pilot, I think his name was English.
English,
Bill English.
Yeah, this English.
See, I wanted to look at the river.
I was
going up and down, going to go up and down the river, and I had him fly up and down the river, the Tanana and the...
Yeah.
And the Yukon River did, so I could get a look at it.
Yeah, he was Englishman, I know.
And he took me all around with the plane so I could spot all these sloughs. When I was down on the river with my boat, I wouldn't get lost.
Yeah, that's right, too.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I know I know first four plane that was from come over here and come from,
this army plane flew over. The first one that you remember of had four army officers in it.
Yeah, that's
the first
right.
plane that actually flew over this part of the country, to your knowledge.
Yes, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
No. And but I got even a book there, but I can't tell now.
You have to look at your writing, because our memory all gets...
Mm-hmm. But I can't tell now what it is. But I used to know it before, like that. That's all I know. But first time I see plane in Chicago, 1909. And that was first come close to Chicago, close to lake, and we was about 50 feet high, and we was all taking picture of plate. That's all the place I live. Mm-hmm. And then Chicago, I see car. One was a car go by a rich woman, you know.
Electric motor in
it. Electric motor in
batteries,
and go that way. That was going all down, back and forth, all you know, but only one woman I see there. That's all I see.
That's the first electric car.
Yeah. That's all I see.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Electric automobile.
Yeah, that's right.
You used to have to charge the batteries.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, she stopped. I don't know if she charged the battery, but no smoke, nothing, you know, when they go out.
Do you remember the first Stanley steamers?
No, I guess.
You remember those?
Yeah, I know that.
They used to want to get those engines for the boats up here in Alaska. The fellows would try to get a hold of an old salmon steamer to put in a boat.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they could stop and get wood to build a fire for the boiler, see? I remember that.
Oh, I got it.
Mm-hmm. Then there was a Pierce Arrow steamer one time. You remember it?
No, I don't.
There was two kind of companies, White and Stanley.
Stanley, I know Stanley.
Pierce Arrow stayed on gasoline afterwards, but they experimented with steam.
Yeah, I spit.
But the White and the Stanley, they made those for several years.
Yeah, that's right, too, I guess. I quite an experience when I beat it out here, by gosh.
That's all right. You don't let anything bother you. Uh-huh. I'm going to run this back and let you hear it now, Paul.
This is Saturday, May the 19th, 1962. This is Armed Forces Day at the military bases here in Alaska. And this is another memorandum of a visit by Andrew Wicken and Harry Hughes to Pioneer Colin McDonald. Colin McDonald today took us around and showed us about 30 or 40 old automobiles, wagons, and old vehicles, and old Caterpillar museum pieces that he has in his yard and in his shops and in his home. He has probably 30 or 40 real old-time phonographs from some of the very earliest phonographs made, and he has several hundred records that are real antiques. The one some he showed me was far back as 1896-97. And then he has phonographs back that age and before with cylinder records. We took some photographs of this these old historical items at his place, and Andy and I spent most of the afternoon visiting them. Another thing, Colin McDonald is an accomplished musician on several instruments. He plays in the bands here at different times over the years. Currently, he plays with a three-piece orchestra here in one of the nightclubs as just a spare time job to help out. He played several pieces on his electronic organ that he has there in his house, and old-time pieces, which he's very familiar with. And it's a very interesting thing to realize and to hear some of the things that we used to have a good time years ago here around the different nightclubs and dance halls and roadhouses here in the interior of Alaska. The people today don't realize what they're missing. The conditions have changed. We've got a new element of people in here that don't have the same thought. They're trying to change the way of life to something that really isn't good, I don't believe. They're losing sight of the important thing where people are happy, and it's an honor to own a home. It's expected. It's part of a heritage. Today, so few people own their own homes here in the Fairbanks area. As near as we could tell from a check of the records, there's less than 1,200 people in this whole area that have their homes paid for and have a deed in their name. And there's approximately 30,000 people live in this area. And I'm just wondering if we haven't been invaded by a foreign doctrine or foreign to our way of life. And I just wonder how far it'll go. This is a memorandum of this afternoon's visit and some comments by myself, Harry Hughes. This is May the 19th, 1962, and this is the end of this portion of this tape.